Dynamite!
It's Dynamite!
Wednesday night, Dynamite!
So Dynamite!
It's awesome! It's a dick!
What's up, everybody? Don't rip me for wearing a Halloween shirt. I always wanted to wear my Michael Myers shirt, so I figured, just wear it tonight. He's back. Hey, if you followed this show for the last 2 weeks, we've been setting up Karrion Kross's return, ultimately taking on Finn Balor. I think that's probably going to happen New Year's Evil. But remember, there is a month pretty much between now and then, so other things have to happen in the meantime. Finn Balor, 9.5 weeks, comes in the ring, talks for a couple of seconds, walks away. This is how you now milk another 2, 3, 4 weeks. What's going on, everybody? Not a bad night for pro wrestling, I'll be honest with you. Sting, we still don't know exactly what he's going to be doing. You know, last week we talked about him being the mentor for Darby Allin. Maybe something is going to happen with Arn Anderson stepping aside. We don't know what Sting is going to do. I know that people, you know, when, like I've said this before, with wrestling news sites, when they have to write probably, likely, maybe, possibly, they don't know. They don't know. Nobody out there knows if Sting is going to wrestle again, if he's going to be a mentor. We don't know. Could we possibly see Arn and Cody versus Darby and Sting? Do I want to see that? No, not really, to be honest with you. More because of Arn Anderson than anything else. But I'll say this. You don't know what Sting is going to be doing. And yes, I know he got that line tonight. One thing's for sure. Nothing's for sure. But you know what? If you enjoyed his appearance tonight, that's all that matters. Kudos to AEW for not milking all night long Sting's interview. They could have done that. They could have hyped it up for 2 hours and done it almost at the very end or right near the very end. Props to AEW for not teasing for the full 2 hours about Kenny Omega as well. I'll be totally honest with you. You know that I'm a fan of both shows, and I will criticize both shows where needed. But, you know, it truly does feel like AEW is going to a new level. NXT also feels like it's getting out of that quicksand, and not quicksand, but just stuck in mud. Doesn't it feel like COVID is obviously a big reason behind that, but doesn't it feel like wrestling has just been stuck in the mud and nobody has been really, really creative to not only get out of the mud, but to take chicken shit and really turn it into chicken salad? It really does feel that a lot of wrestling is turning the corner. Monday nights, I'm not going to lie to you, if it wasn't for doing a show with Mish, there'd be a lot of Raws that I would just pass up. I went away 2 weeks ago, and Friday, there was one Friday that I was away on vacation. I did not miss SmackDown at all. I did miss it. Now, when I say that, it's not that, I didn't miss the episode. I watched it. No, I didn't miss not seeing it. Yes, I watched it a few days later, but it wouldn't have mattered to me. The one thing that you can say more about AEW and NXT than WWE's product is you could miss a week, maybe even 2 weeks with WWE programming, and you pretty much could pick up where you left off. You really didn't miss much of anything. AEW and NXT, they do progress some storylines a lot quicker than others. Yes, there are other storylines that, you know, like I said, just get stuck. But, we'll talk about it tonight. Now, I appreciate everyone's kind words about Monday. You know, Mish and I had a very long talk over the weekend, and we made a concerted effort to leave all that social media garbage out of the shows from now on. Talking about goofs, we're going to leave it out of the shows from now on. And now, because I do timestamps, I got my pen ready. So as I'm doing tonight's show, I'll be writing down some timestamps so I could update it after the show is over tonight. But that forces the show to be much more organized, and it keeps the topics nice and crisp. And as a result, that will cut down on the show lengths a little bit, because some people have said, you know, some of the diatribes I go on, you know, that could add 30 minutes to a show that's really not necessary. So we're going to tonight talk about Raw. Excuse me for a minute. I'm not going to slap myself tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about NXT. Tonight we're going to talk about AEW Dynamite. And a couple of quick words on Impact Wrestling. In fact, I'll even write Impact right at the get-go. We'll start right off with that. How long are we into the show? Now, when I write timestamps down, you don't have to worry. I'm not throughout the show going to be like, you know, telling you I'm writing it down. I'll just jot a little time stamp, and then I'll just go back later and see what I was talking about. Okay. Kenny Omega was on Impact Wrestling last night. Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone were also on Impact Wrestling last night. And as far as ratings-wise, and, you know, I have to address this. Impact Wrestling has been averaging about 150,000 viewers recently. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. I think before last night, their highest rating that they did all year was around 200,000 viewers. So the week, let me just bring it to the point. Impact Wrestling last night increased to about 221,000 viewers. I believe it was about 45,000 compared to the week before. Now, I watched the segments of AEW. I skimmed through some of the other matches in Impact. I'm sorry, you know, Eric Young versus Cody Deaner, I'm not really interested in all that much. TJP versus Brock. I will say this. You know, when you have, I don't want to say wrestling royalty. That's a stretch to say about AEW. But when you are in the type of business and you're going to have a dinner, all right, and you're going to have guests over, and the guests happen to be like much higher on the food chain than you, you know, you usually put out your finest china. You usually put out some good catered meals or just really prime rib, like just to try to impress. And obviously, Impact Wrestling got a huge amount of buzz over the last 7 days. Impact Wrestling trended number one last night on Twitter, which is impressive. But here's where I honestly think their pre-planning really did not work out all that well. Because last night, how it felt was someone who is high, you know, bringing over high executives to dinner and you want to impress them and everything. And when they come over, you just bought like Chinese takeout. Nothing against Chinese food. Or you just got a couple of pizza pies. Or maybe you just made like hot dogs, pigs in a blanket. I mean, you saw those matches yesterday. No disrespect for TJP versus Brian Myers. I wouldn't even watch that if it was on main event. To be honest, you looked at those matches, it made AEW feel like this last night, and it made Impact Wrestling feel like this. They should have put on, even if they replayed a match or two from a recent pay-per-view, they should have put on their tux, and it just felt like, you know, just, man, it just, I don't know. Impact Wrestling last night, really, the flow was not all that great. They were more excited about AEW being on there. But I will say this. I enjoyed Kenny Omega and Don Callis being interviewed by Josh Matthews in the trailer park. I like how they had security so Rich Swann couldn't get to Kenny Omega. Obviously, we'll probably see Kenny Omega versus Rich Swann. That's probably part of the deal out of all of this. And that will probably air on Impact Wrestling, kind of like when Thunder Rosa first showed up on AEW. So you know, yesterday, and it was funny yesterday because what they, you know, Don, a lot of people don't understand or younger fans don't realize how great Don Callis is on the mic. I mean, this isn't, you know, he didn't always work behind the scenes. In WWF, he was the Jackal. He was in ECW, did commentary with Joey Styles for a little while. Cyrus the Virus. Don Callis can talk. So Don Callis being in Kenny Omega's side, and you see the rose-colored glasses and the way he dresses, Don Callis just gives that presence that he is more important than you, that he's better than you. You know, and it's not just like the MJF intro. I'm better than you, and you know it. Don Callis, the same thing. So, and anybody that has followed my shows for the last bunch of years, I did the first year of the history show, and I got into great detail the relationship with Chris Jericho, Don Callis, and Kenny Omega. So anybody that's followed my show for years knows I have brought that up repeatedly way before when AEW was still just a zygote in the wrestling womb. We were talking about that. So Don Callis and Kenny Omega really do go back a long ways. And this just, you know, you on the surface, it feels like it gives more of a rub to Impact Wrestling than anything else. But it does give AEW a rub. And let me explain. Tonight kind of proved it. Kenny Omega in storyline by having the audacity to show up on Impact Wrestling with AEW's championship belt, that helps elevate Kenny Omega as a heel. Now, let's just pretend that this whole Impact Wrestling thing wasn't going to happen. And Kenny Omega beat Moxley last week. No Don Callis, no Impact Wrestling, no walking out of there, none of this. And Kenny Omega shows up today. What does he do next? Do you see how Kenny Omega has no opponent right now in a feud? Because just by showing up on Impact Wrestling, Kenny Omega, they just created this huge storyline and there's no opponent. So trust me when I tell you, even though on the surface it looks like Impact Wrestling is really benefiting from this, and they are, AEW is benefiting big time because now they have taken Kenny Omega's the character development. Look, I know a lot of you know what Kenny Omega has done in Japan. I know a lot of you know the guy could cut a promo. You know what he can do. In AEW, you know, it takes two to tango. And Kenny Omega, by doing this storyline, allows him to be that cocky cleaner. Good night. You know what I mean? So this, that's why last week I said, I'm going to go into this with open eyes and open ears, open mind. And I think everybody out there should as well. If you're not a fan of AEW, what happened over the last 7 days probably would not change your mind all that much. Tonight's episode of Dynamite was a lot of fun. Tonight's episode of NXT was a lot of fun. You look at previous episodes of NXT, and how many times have you heard me say, why did they put these people? I mean, I know everybody's got to get a shot to a certain extent, but there's some matches they just place, and it just, I don't know, it just feels random, unnecessary, and you know that fans are just not into it. Tonight, maybe Imperium versus the Grizzled Young Veterans versus Ever-Rise. You know, I know they're trying to do something there, but I just have no connection with any of the three teams. Jake Atlas versus Isaiah Swerve Scott, you know, teasing that Isaiah Swerve Scott might turn heel. Not bad. But, you know, let's talk about both shows. But just in closing, as far as Impact Wrestling yesterday, we talked about Kenny Omega, and in the trailer park, Kenny Omega, Don Callis, and Josh Matthews are there, and they have the AEW belt. And basically what they were doing to flaunt on Impact Wrestling television is to change the nameplate, and they were going to put Kenny Omega's name on the AEW championship, and they were going to take Moxley's name off. And it was funny because when Don Callis and Kenny Omega were kind of mocking Josh Matthews, Kenny Omega said, oh, you knew Ambrose. He actually said Ambrose, which I thought was funny. Then he called Matthews, I think, a Stanford stooge, which was pretty funny. And then they just threw the nameplate, like, we don't want that. So it was very well done. It was very well done. Now, for those that are curious about Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone, Tony and Tony, just think about that. On Monday nights, I think a lot of people don't realize that Mish's first name is Anthony, same as mine. So on Monday nights, you got Tony and Tony. Tuesday, you also had Tony and Tony. Well, actually, you did too, because Mish and I were on Patreon last night as well. But Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone were on Impact Wrestling yesterday. And basically what they did was they played it off that they bought airtime. Yeah, let's make that a little bigger. They bought airtime. This was like a paid announcement. The following is a paid announcement by All Elite Wrestling. Not like the NWO, but, you know, anybody that goes back to wrestling in the 90s, you remember Mick Memphis? Remember we covered that on the history show, Mick Memphis? When Vince McMahon in 1993 showed up on Memphis television, this was way before the Mr. McMahon character, and we chronologically covered his feud with Jerry Lawler. Bret Hart went down there, Owen Hart. It was fabulous. And it was more for Memphis television than anything else. Tony Khan showing up on Impact Wrestling yesterday and teasing like he could buy Impact. And he's got money and he's got this, and he's kind of like talking down on the Impact fans. Look, I know a lot of you call Tony Khan Money Mark. I know a lot of you think that Tony Khan, you know, will not be able to resist and go the Dixie Carter route and become a character on television. My honest answer to all of you out there, and look, if you notice, nobody from AEW publicly, you know, gives any props to, you know, what I do or Mish does. And we get loads of attention on their shows, and we are straight up honest. You know, it's sacrilegious to give us compliments. So I'm saying this because I'm not in the good graces of anybody. But if Tony Khan shows up on TV and is that cocky, young, quote-unquote money mark that you perceive him to be, and he's on TV because he can and you can't, it could actually work. It really could actually work. You know, as long as it's not too much as far as the television product goes, but it almost feels like that's where it's going. Do you remember about 2 or 3 months ago, I teased and I said, do you think there's ever a chance that Tony Khan turns on AEW and joins up with the Click? Does anybody remember that? Not the Click, the Elite. Does anybody remember when I said that on one of the shows? I said, you know, I wouldn't put it out of the realms of possibility that Tony Khan could become an on-air character, almost like what Bischoff did. Bischoff was, you know, just doing commentating. Then he got powerbombed by Hall and Nash. And then ultimately he turned heel and he joined the NWO. And, you know, he gave them all that muscle because he was, you know, management in the back as well. I teased that a couple of months ago, had no idea that they were going to get involved with Impact Wrestling. But I'm telling you, if it's entertaining, that's all that matters. That's why, you know, like, you know, tonight, people are going to rag on Sting once again. You know, tonight, people are going to rag on Tony Khan being on TV for Impact. You know, people are going to rag on the possibility that Tony Khan may end up being on air. It only makes sense. He's got to address Kenny Omega, and he can't do it just on paid announcements. Tony Khan is going to be a character on TV soon. I feel it coming. And my point is, when people bitch and go, Shaq does a little interview segment today. Immediately after it happened, I did a quick Twitter search and I just typed in Shaq. And once again, the usual suspects just ripping on the idea. Snoop Dogg! Is that Sasha Banks' cousin? I mean, what is WWE going to change Sasha Banks' theme now? Because Snoop, I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but tell me that doesn't cross your mind that AEW announces that Snoop Dogg is going to host one of the episodes of AEW. You know, it kind of, I think, would rub WWE the wrong way. But my point is, people immediately have a problem with everything. If you are enjoying it, that's all that matters. What they did with Sting tonight was not a big deal. It was a small segment. It didn't blow out of proportion. And I personally think it was fine. I really think it was fine. So anyway, oh, by the way, you see the little Christmas thing? Somebody asked me earlier for my address and is sending me one of the little tabletop Christmas tree to put in the background. So, you know, some of you out there sometimes like to send little things here and there. And I put them on the wall, put them in the background. But, yeah, we'll have a little Christmas tree, I think, by next week, as long as this person comes through. But, yeah, we got the Christmas banner. Shout out to Shaheen. Nuclear Heat. I know it's still 16. It's only 16 days away, Christmas. You know, it's not like it's a month away. We're only half a month away. So yeah, I guess putting up the graphics now is not too early. I want to give a big shout out to Crazy Cruiserweight. How many showed their age on social media with the 7 mention? Dude, are you really going to embarrass me right now? Yes, I didn't have to go on social media to reveal my age. When the Dark Order did that with Dustin, I popped because we covered that on the History Show. I mean, for those that don't know, Dustin Rhodes was Goldust. Well, you all know that. He was Goldust. One point in the late 90s, maybe right, or no, it had to have been before 2000 because they were doing like a lot of hardcore stuff. It was before that, but it was late 90s. Dustin left WWE, and they did a couple of vignettes of some weird character. And basically, if you go back and you watch the vignettes, if you've never seen them, you got to go out of your way to see them. Because when you look at it now, they almost look really creepy, because you have like a little kid, you know, and it's supposed to be the boogeyman. In my opinion, I always thought it was supposed to be the boogeyman. 1999. Thank you, Costanza. Yeah, 1999. So you have one segment where a little kid is in bed and you see Dustin, like, you kind of like through the window. And, you know, you think about it, I mean, it just really comes back a little bit creepy. But so they did a couple of vignettes, and I got to be honest with you, at that time, I don't remember, and I was doing a hotline at that time. I don't remember anybody saying, oh, it feels like pedophilia, it feels weird. And said, no, we were like, you know, okay, this seems pretty interesting. And then Dustin made his debut as 7. And when he made his debut in WCW, it was almost like he was flying to the ring. They did this whole eloquent introduction. And this is what he looked like. And, you know, when he did it, like, you know, it was a hard sell compared to Goldust, because Goldust at that time was really, really, you know, just instilled. Now, remember, when he made his return and then he teamed up with Booker T, you know, Booker T and Goldust, you know, that happened after this, you know, and then it quickly, this was a distant memory. But the minute Dustin hit the ring as 7, he cut a promo and basically did the Emma. He cut a promo and talked in his regular voice, and he was addressing the powers to be that are making him look like this and everything like that, and totally, the character, that was it. The character was dead. It was completely dead. So if you've never seen it, you really want to go check it out. Just go on Google or YouTube, or was that Video Motion? Just type in Dustin WCW 7. And pull that out. Wasn't a little kid from Married with Children also named 7? I think his name was 7 too, but you know, you really got to check out the vignettes of 7. and then see his intro, and then he cuts the pro. It's the funniest thing, man, because he killed the character and never even like did anything with it. So when the Dark Order today offered him a position to be Seven in the Dark Order, yeah, crazy cruiserweight. Yes, it revealed all our old ages like that. I mean, it was pretty funny, man. By the way, cruiserweight. Are you unbanned on Discord? You don't have to super chat that. Just write yes or no in the chat. Because I don't know if you heard the Patreon show last night, but I lobbied for you. I admit the things that you were saying on Discord were pretty uncalled for. And if you do it again and they ban you again, I cannot do anything about it. But I think you are unbanned. So, you know, check out the Patreon show from last night and you'll hear what I said. So... and if people don't like it, like I said, they could just block you. It's like a shadow ban. You're still there, but a lot of people won't see you and you won't see them. So anyway, so go check out Seven, please. Oh, and here, that's what it looked like yesterday with Kenny Omega, Josh Matthews, and in the van, you know, the truck, you know, whatever you want to call it. And Don Callis is fire. He is fire. He's a perfect person to fit because what he says about his relationship with Kenny Omega is legit. It is legit. So, but, you know, again, all right, they got 45,000 more people tuning in this week. Some people online call that a joke, call it a failure. Call it a disappointment. I don't look at it based on the rating. If I liked it, that's all that matters. If you liked it, that's all that matters. I'll be honest with you. I personally think that it's good that the rating didn't go up all that much because I joked about it on Monday with Mish. I said, could you imagine if the rating goes up to 300,000 for the second hour, because they hype up Kenny Omega all night long, and the first hour is all, or the reverse. The Kenny Omega interview happens in the first hour, and the first hour it's 300,000 viewers, and then it drops down to 100,000 because everybody just tuned off because, oh, Kenny Omega was on. We don't need to be here anymore. What is that? How does that make your roster feel? So Impact handled it well yesterday. AEW handled Sting and Kenny Omega tonight very well. As well. So props to both of them. By the way, tonight we are going to do a new contest. And the cool thing about it is I will announce the winner on December 23rd, right before Christmas. So you will get the gift probably a couple of days after Christmas, but I think this is going to be a cool gift. I was getting a lot of emails with feedback about the prizes over the last month or so. And the one thing people kept saying over and over again is, you know, why don't you put up something with NXT. So I got something nice for everybody tonight. I think you'll really enjoy it. But I know a lot of you already know this. The two winners already know this. But there are quite a few of you out there that only tune into my Wednesday shows. Last week, I completely forgot to announce the winners of the two signed Nakamura photos. I want to play it right now. It's only 45 seconds. So let me just announce the winners of the Nakamura photos, and then we'll get into AEW and NXT. And by the way, I'll do a little roll call on the YouTube chat. All I ask is just type your name once. And if you want me to shout out where you're from, type in just like your state or your country. You don't have to write San Antonio or Bronx. You just write New York, you know. Or if you get to write Bronx. But first, let me play the winners of the contest. By the way, who said it about Kenny Omega in North Carolina? Oh, Prince Albert's. No, you can't say North Carolina when you talk about Kenny Omega. You got to say it like Justin Roberts. What does he say? From North Carolina! I can't do Justin Roberts. I can't do Justin Roberts, sorry. But look, I mentioned this Friday on the Don Tony Show. Did you notice Kayla Braxton, when she introduced Roman Reigns on Friday, she started running down Roman Reigns' resume a little bit. I said it Friday, I honestly think that WWE took that a little bit from what AEW's been doing introducing Kenny Omega. So, but anyway, some quick shout-outs. Roll call, Starkiller from Canada, Jeremy Westbrook from Washington, D.C., Dayhawk from Cookie Valley, Benjamin from, I have no idea. From his mother's womb. Chatside Forum. Oh, he might be a test tube experiment. Chatside Forums from PA. Garth Overstein from Oklahoma. One false is Justin Roberts is such a mark. Yeah, he has me blocked. Fuck you, Justin. Michael Gonzalez from Jersey. Lion from Ontario. Ontario, Canada. VJ from Toronto. Sam from Toronto, Derek from North Carolina. Wow, a lot of Canada and North Carolina tonight. Hulkster, where else? Venice Beach, brother. Devin from Baltimore, who's dad from Washington? Jody from Colorado, Joe from St. Louis. Oh, Prince Albert's from Guam. Cool, man. Ken Albert's, California. Franchise from my mother's dreams. Hey. The Dream from New Jersey. What school did you go to? Isaac from from Philly. I corrected that spell check for you. Bronny from Dearborn, Michigan. Gordon from Pennsylvania. Jim Z from Parts Unknown. Sterling from Birmingham. Kenny Omega from Charlotte, North Carolina. He's not in the chat. We're almost done. We'll get more shout-outs later. Mr. Mike from Texas. Austin from Alabama. Chris Richards from California. Felix Urena from the South Bronx. The South Bronx. Shazif Ali from Scotland. Crazy Cruiserweight from Brooklyn. Alpha from Brazil! Daniel Grizak from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Wow, nice diverse family today. Benjamin from Texas. Phil the Promoter from Staten Island. Kevon Lewis from Missouri. And we go into the shows tonight. Should I announce next week's prize now? Should we? Actually, you know what? What should we cover first? AEW or NXT? We'll be able to fly through both tonight because, you know, and it's something that I noticed with AEW the last couple of weeks. Tonight, they did it all night long, and I don't know if anybody's picking up on that. All right, we're getting AEW. All right, we got a couple of NXTs. All right, hold on. We'll give people, you know. All right, it's mostly AEW. So as soon as we do the AEW recap and we get to NXT, then what I'll do is I'll announce the prize. If you're an NXT fan, I think you'll like this. You know what? I'll throw it out there now. Let's just throw it out there now. Now, how to be part of this contest is easy. All you have to do, if you saw how I announced the winners, it's the same format. All you have to do is post a comment on this video. In the comment section, post something about tonight's show, how you feel about AEW and Impact, Kenny Omega, Sting. I don't care what it is. You don't have to kiss my ass. If you post 5-10 times, you'd still, the algorithm only goes by the names. So you don't, I already checked it with TubeBuddy and all this stuff. You don't get increased chances of winning. So you're better off just posting one comment and that's it. It doesn't increase your chances for real. But all you gotta do is just post a comment. And then the afternoon of December 23rd, I will run that program. I will screen capture it so it is 100% authentic. And we'll announce the winner. So if you are a fan of AEW and not a fan of NXT, give this to someone else, put it on eBay. On eBay right now, it's selling for $300. If you're a fan of NXT, keep it, sell it, do whatever you want with it, I don't care. But Halloween Havoc was a very fun night, and Halloween Havoc beat AEW in the ratings that night. Halloween Havoc had some great matches, some great gimmicks, hosted by Shotzi Blackheart. So I got from my friend Rob, who gets me all my memorabilia stuff for me personally or to give away on contest. He came through and got me one of these straight from WWE. It's not an 8x10. It's one of those 11x16s or 16x24s. I don't know the exact size, but I do know it's bigger than just an 8x10. And it is from Halloween Havoc. It is their program for Halloween Havoc. This is straight from WWE. It is only limited to 100, and it is autographed by every person you see on the screen. It is autographed by Shotzi Blackheart, Johnny Gargano, Damian Priest, Rhea Ripley, Raquel Gonzalez, Dexter Lumis, Cameron Grimes, Candice LeRae, and Io Shirai. So someone is going to win that December 23rd, and all you have to do is post a comment in this section. You don't have to do it tonight. You could do it in a week. You could do it the day before. But just keep in mind, on the 23rd in the afternoon, that's when I pick the winner and I capture it. So don't wait till the last minute, because as soon as you post your comment, you're in. That's it. You're in. So good luck, everybody. By the way, what I'm about to say, some people might think that I might be just out of whack when I say this. Charlotte Flair. Obviously, because she comes from the legendary Flair family, daughter of Ric Flair, obviously her stature is already inflated because of her family name. I'm talking about when she first got into wrestling. For me, Charlotte Flair is the number one woman in wrestling for the last 10 years. And I know a lot of you out there may put Asuka as number one. I put Asuka as number two. And the only reason why I put Asuka as number two is because of the fact that her English is limited. But, you know, I always bring up how in baseball they have the five-tool player. Like, you could do, like, five different... Charlotte has all five. Asuka is close to having all five, but for me, Charlotte is just a little bit higher than Asuka. Now, I remember when Charlotte first broke into NXT, and anybody remember that intro? Remember the intro when she first came on the main roster and you saw disco lights and it looked like somebody who worked at a strip club than anything else? And all she's doing is dancing, and I remember that. I love that, actually. But the thing with Charlotte is when you saw her develop in NXT, you felt something special being put together. You felt that this person is a mega star in the making. Someone that is just overpowers a lot of other women in wrestling. And I personally think that Charlotte has lived up to all the expectations that started to build as she developed in NXT. For some reason, I'm starting to get that same feeling about Rhea Ripley. You know, when you watch the end of NXT tonight and you had, you know, Toni Storm come out after the match between Raquel Gonzalez and Ember Moon, and you saw, you know, Toni Storm come out and try to beat down Ember Moon, and Rhea Ripley came out, and just her presence. Yes, I understand the storyline is they backed down and everything like that. But Rhea Ripley is starting to really... I mean, look, she had momentum going into WrestleMania last year. A lot of people felt that Charlotte shouldn't have won. But, you know, I personally think that you've... Look, I know it's a disgusting term, but I've said it on my shows for at least 10 years now. We get a couple of months to WrestleMania, and then some people get frustrated. The most infamous one that I talked about was Finn Balor. A couple of years ago, Finn Balor, they were doing nothing with the guy. This is before they, you know, even before he was Universal Champion. And I remember saying, everyone, let them take their time with this guy. There's no reason to blow your load now, so close to WrestleMania. Let WrestleMania come and go, and then you build up another year for momentum. in my opinion, there was no reason to rush Rhea Ripley last year into WrestleMania. And looking back on it, as much as so many of you out there absolutely hated the fact that Charlotte beat Rhea Ripley and was the NXT Women's Championship, even though you despised that at the time, look back at it now and remember COVID hit at that time. COVID was already here. That's why WrestleMania had no fans. So in hindsight, 2020 was a shit year for Rhea Ripley. And I got news for you. Unless she has a major injury in the future, unless she becomes this total screw-up, I think Rhea Ripley, a couple of years from now, is going to look back at 2020 and say, you know what? 2020 was my worst year of my career, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. So I personally think, looking back on it, as weird as it sounds, Rhea Ripley being such a small cog in the NXT wheel for the last 11 months, 11 and a half, 12 months, was probably the best thing that happened to her. Seriously. And I'm telling you, I have showed the love for Raquel Gonzalez for a while now. She's putting it together, and you're watching it in real time, and it's awesome. I'm becoming a big fan. Yesterday on Patreon, we were doing some goofy questions, and somebody had said, like, you could choose one female on the current roster to be on a desert island with, and I chose Raquel Gonzalez for various reasons. Nothing really perverted. But the thing is, with Rhea Ripley, there's a presence that's building. Is a presence, and I'm getting the same feeling that I did with Charlotte when she was starting to really put it together in NXT. I'm telling you, I think people are going to compare, not just because they had the WrestleMania match, but people are going to start in a year or two really putting Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair almost on the same level. Kind of like Bayley and Sasha Banks. Is that a good one to put it up with? And I have a feeling that a couple of years from now, there's going to be either a WrestleMania or a huge pay-per-view rematch between Rhea Ripley and Charlotte. And it is going to be so evenly matched that it's going to probably be a really memorable feud. Remember that I said it. Unfortunately, well, now because I timestamp, yeah, I can look back and say, yeah, I remember, yeah. But seriously, I don't know how you all feel about that. But if you really agree or disagree with what I'm saying, maybe post that as the comment, and you'll be in the contest as well. Rhea Ripley is really, really showing it to me. And you could see a building. It's the slow build. You know, you ever hear the slow burn? You know, there's some people that they have a slow burn. Their demise is very, very small. Rhea Ripley is a slow build. It's just a slow build, taking its time. It's like aging a wine. All right. So you know what? I know this is going to disappoint some AEW fans, but since we just had that conversation about Rhea Ripley, let's talk about NXT first. Like I said, there's no reason to spend a half an hour on this. I will give it ample time, and we'll cover NXT, then we'll go to AEW, then we'll call it a night. By the way, on Friday, Joey Ryan, I almost want to buy a cameo just to get him to, like, you know, talk about something. I don't want to say it now. I say it Friday, but Joey Ryan, told you. We're in the middle of COVID. This guy claimed that he lost all his revenue because of these accusations. And I don't want to get into all the details right now, but basically the judge is ordering Joey Ryan's legal counsel. Now, I'll get into the details Friday. I'm really trying my hardest not to make fun of Wade Keller or Mike Johnson or any of them anymore. You know, Bob Ryder just died. And, you know, what I said about him, I truly meant, and I apologize. And it also got me thinking about some of the mean stuff that I've said about some of the other people in the past. And some of them have deserved it, obviously. But, you know, I think you got to be a better person sometimes. But Mike Johnson got it so wrong. so wrong when talking about Joey Ryan. He actually wrote something dumb that the judge may throw it out because people haven't responded. The accused haven't responded. And as a result, the judge may throw it out. If you just think about that for a minute, imagine if you get sued and you use that logic. Oh, I just won't answer the lawsuit. And the judge will throw it out. No, you lose by default. Remember when I explained to everyone that with lawsuits, sometimes if you don't show up and you don't take it seriously, the other person doesn't want you to show up because they have a better chance of winning by default because you don't show? Mike Johnson has no clue of what he's talking about. But the bottom line is, the judge is telling Joey Ryan, you better show us some proof as to where you believe you, otherwise we're throwing this out. And we'll talk about it Friday. But Joey Ryan's lawsuit is this close of being thrown out. You watch. And if you remember, I mean, we talked about it in detail. Nothing that surprised any of us out there. Neil Ray, what's up, my friend? Yeah, Io and Ripley are beast. Io Shirai, man. Io Shirai, I'm starting to compare Io Shirai and Asuka. Asuka is still like this. I think it's fair to say, and it's because Asuka has more years on the U.S. brand for WWE, but, you know, Asuka's still, but, you know, they've done really good. Oh, my God. Did you see the segment today with Boa and Xia Li? First of all, something tells me when that replays on WWE's website, there's going to be black and white segments in it. I got to put my glasses on for this to see what kind of reaction in the chat room right now. If you did not see, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, if you did not see the segment that they did with Xia Li and Boa today, Wade Barrett said that he didn't know if they were training or if they were being tortured. I mean, honestly, no. See, I keep, my eyesight is not that bad, but Callie Conway, I can't read anything without my glasses. So, you know, I don't have to use my glasses if I'm not reading notes or anything, but I'm not exaggerating when I say this. NXT's had some great video packages throughout 2020. I could honestly tell you, when I got finished watching that segment with Boa and Xia Li, for me, it was the greatest NXT vignette. Not hyping up a match, but character development, it was the number one vignette that I've seen in NXT this year. What is that karate movie? Some of you will remember it. It might have even been Karate Kid, or it might have been related to Karate. I never liked Karate Kid movies, by the way. But what was the movie? Some of you may remember it. And I don't know if it's called Bloodsport, but there was a movie back in the 80s. And I remember the commercial. It always finished with some Asian guy, a very famous guy that used to be in those movies. And I remember he had no shoes on and he was like this. And he did like a spin kick, like a 180, and just kicked the guy in the face. And he was like was it Cobra Kai? No, Cobra Kai is now. I'm talking 80s. There was a movie in the 80s. I remember the guy was wearing a headband. It was some Asian guy or Japanese guy. And he did like a real slow. But yeah, Hulkster says Bloodsport. I think it was Bloodsport. I thought I was watching Bloodsport tonight. The fact that they showed that much blood, whether it was real or not real, it doesn't matter. But what they put together tonight in that segment, you know what? Ray DeRazzo says Hidden Dragon. You know what? I think it's Bloodsport. It's got to be Bloodsport because Bloodsport, that name sounds too familiar to me, even though I didn't really like those movies all that much, but I remember the commercials. And Hidden Dragon almost sounds like a Chinese porn. You know, like the Hidden Dragon, you know, he's hiding his dragon. By the way, should I bring up the Austin Theory thing? Because some of you already said it in the chat room. and I really don't want to bring it up. I don't want to bring attention to it, but I think I might need to.
It was me, Austin.
Remember Sunday.
It was me, Austin. It was me all along, Austin.
Adult video has surfaced. Austin Theory. Ringside News and some other websites out there. If I had talent that I can make my toes do this, I'd do it with my toes as well. You see the garbage, what they did to Lars, and you saw how they handled the Austin Theory thing. For people that, I know a lot of you knew, wanted me to cover it. For the people that don't know, Austin Theory made his return. There was footage out there already of Austin Theory. I think it was a phone hack, to be honest with you. And in one of the videos, he's playing with his pee-pee. He's well endowed. I'm not a fan of those movies, but, he was nude, okay? But like I said, to me, it looked like it was hacked from his phone. I don't know. But here's my problem with it. When Lars made his return to WWE television early this year, you had no DQ, and I like those guys, but they did it also. You had no DQ. What's up, J-Man? You had no DQ. You had Ringside News. You had others. If you didn't know about Lars's history, let's give you a refresher course. And they showed Mitch. They showed screenshots of Mitch, and they talked about it. I mean, they threw it out there. They did everything possible to try to start some cancer culture up to get Lars off the TV. And everyone out there that's watching this knows I'm not exaggerating at all. Well, guess what? Austin Theory now is back on TV. And these websites, these same websites today, mentioned that video has surfaced of Austin Theory, which was already out there. But this time, you know what they said? We will not post links or photos here. We will not do things like that. And right underneath, but if you'd like to buy one of our shirts, please visit our t-shirt store. Dicks. Total dicks. They posted it for clickbait to get you to go on the site to see what was talking about. And when you went on there, oh no, we would never talk about something like that, or we will not post links, we will not post screenshots, we will not post the websites. You could do a search. Actually, those websites said you could do a search and find it yourself. But with Lars, I'll never forget Aaron Rift. No, not in personal, my friend. I'll never forget what you wrote earlier this year. For those that don't know about Lars, here's a refresher course. Garbage, man. And I hope this does not derail Austin Theory's on TV. So, anyway. So, let's talk about NXT. Honest review. You know I'm always honest about how I feel about this stuff. Finn Balor comes out. I'm a big fan of Balor. I don't need to prove that. You all know that already. But how WWE has been... how they treated his character and him for the last 9.5 weeks is an absolute joke. Look, it's serious business what happened to him with his broken jaw. No question. But they didn't strip him of the title. And that's bad enough, especially under previous circumstances with that title. They had no backup plan. Suddenly today, you get the usual WWE. How many times have you seen this on Raw and SmackDown over the last even 2 years? Bayley is in a ring. She's the women's champion. She starts bragging. Her music is interrupted by Lacey Evans. Lacey Evans talks for 30 seconds. Her music is interrupted by Naomi. Naomi talks for 30 seconds. I should be number one contender. Her music after 30 seconds is interrupted by blah, 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 blah. And then this person comes out. And the next thing you know, there's five people in the ring. Why didn't these five people come out in storyline 9.5 weeks ago when this guy's jaw was broken in two different spots? So they had the usual bullshit beginning. And if you pay close attention to Finn Balor tonight, it furthered the goofiness with him. Remember 3 weeks ago? Remember with Pat McAfee? You remember Finn Balor came back and he said, "The prince is back. The prince is back. The mice have been playing. The cat is back. The cat is back." McAfee shows up. "Get the fuck out of here. You should just hand over the title." And what does WWE have Finn Balor do 3 weeks ago?
He walks away. He walks away. So Pete Dunne and Pat McAfee and Oney Larkin and Danny Burch could cut a promo about the Undisputed Era. He just walks away.
This guy just said, "The mice have been out to play. The cat is back. You no more playing." And then he disappears for two fucking weeks. He disappears for two fucking weeks. And then last week, the vignette comes back. "No, the prince is back." "No, this time he's back. And I'll be on NXT Wednesday." So what does he do today? He cuts the same promo that he cut 2-3 weeks ago. And then he gets interrupted by Pete Dunne, which I loved right away, because didn't I say last week I wouldn't mind seeing Pete Dunne take on Finn Balor for the NXT Championship? Pete Dunne comes out, him and Finn Balor. You see, did you notice the 30-second deal today? Pete Dunne had 30 seconds. "We cut from the same cloth. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah." And then Kyle O'Reilly's music hits. Kyle O'Reilly comes out there, and Kyle O'Reilly's shown a little respect to Pete Dunne, but he's also reminded Finn Balor about the match and this and that. Blah, 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 blah. 30 seconds. Oh, out comes Damian Priest.
"Everybody, everybody, hey, there's no question. Blah, 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 blah."
And then Damian Priest, as he's talking, Finn Balor just leaves the ring and starts walking away. And I'm like, this is what you did with this guy? "The cat is back. The prince is back." And then he leaves. Then he leaves. Seriously. And people are agreeing right now. We all love Finn Balor. It's not Finn Balor's fault. But just look at the last 3 weeks. It's the boy. It's the cat who cried wolf. You know? "The cat is back. The mice would go away. The cat is back." And the mice fucking played for the next 2 weeks. And then today, the prince is back. And then you had 3-4 people hit the ring, and they're all insulting each other, and Balor just walks away. And then Damian Priest is like, "Where are you going?" And then Karrion Kross, the intro hits. And out comes Scarlett Bordeaux. And Scarlett Bordeaux, you know, just staring down Finn Balor, and, you know, Finn is basically saying, you know, "When your guy is ready, I'm ready." You know, and that's pretty much to tease it. And look, I talked about it after TakeOver. Karrion Kross's return should be designed for one thing and one thing only. I want my title back. I never lost my title. That is it. That is it. Damian Priest calling Scarlett Bordeaux smoke show today was the seed planting to have Karrion Kross come out and attack Damian Priest later on. There was no scoops. There was no inside sources. That's how it played out on TV. And what this does, Karrion Kross beating the shit out of Damian Priest, what all this does is masquerade the fact that Finn Balor probably will not wrestle again until New Year's Evil. As we talked about a week ago, he's not going to wrestle until January 6th. That will be 13.5 weeks since he had his last match. So, you know, again, WWE did a pathetic job handling Finn Balor's... I shouldn't even say... It's not just Finn Balor the last couple of weeks. But they did a pathetic job with that NXT championship over the last 9.5 weeks. You could have been elevating someone else right now. They could have started building momentum on someone. But for 9.5 weeks, they did nothing. Now, it's funny because when you looked at it today, all right, Pete Dunne, all right, he hasn't been around all that long. But you got Damian Priest out there. You know, you got Kyle O'Reilly out there. You could have had 2-3 other people come out there. You know that. And it could have done that 9.5 weeks ago. And someone right now could have been on some crazy-ass momentum. And what it feels like to me is that the reason why WWE didn't even bother doing that was because they wanted Balor to be the guy. They want Balor versus Cross to be the money match. And they didn't want to take the chance that someone else built some crazy-ass momentum where the fans are like, oh, you're just taking the title off of so-and-so because Finn Balor's back from his injury and Karrion Kross is back from his injury, because you know that goes on all over social media. So that opening intro tonight was typical Raw or SmackDown. Typical Raw or SmackDown. The champions in the ring boast for 30 seconds, interrupted by first person. Blah, 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 interrupted by second person. Blah, 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 interrupted by third person. Blah, 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 interrupted by fourth person. Then you go to commercial. And we're almost 20 minutes already gone by the way. So Finn Balor tells Scarlett Bordeaux, when he's ready, I'm ready. Damian Priest makes a little remark to Scarlett. She walks away with this big smile on her face, like, okay, Damian Priest, you wait till later on. We'll see you smiling. So Pete Dunne being interviewed in the back. Oh, my God, Killian Dane is back. And he wants revenge against Pete Dunne for what happened a couple of weeks ago. Remember when they attacked him outside and left him in like 10 pints of blood? So is this the segue? Are we going to get Killian Dane and Drake Maverick versus Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch? Is that where all this is headed? Because that's where it feels like it's headed to me. And I like Killian Dane and Drake Maverick as a tag team. But they have done gots with them for the longest time. This feels worse than how they treated Breezango towards the end. But that's what that's what it feels like to me. Jake Atlas beats Isaiah Swerve Scott. Decent match. I think a lot of us were surprised that Jake Atlas got the win. Isaiah Swerve Scott refuses to shake hands at the end of the match. And kind of teasing a little bit of possibly a heel turn for Isaiah Swerve Scott. Okay. All right. I don't know. I don't know where that goes. Isaiah Swerve Scott, maybe they need to turn him heel. Maybe they need, they had him go with Santos Escobar. It didn't really work out all that well. You know, they don't have much else to do with him right now. So, hey, you know, we'll see where it goes. Tommaso Ciampa cuts a promo on Cameron Grimes. Now it's, let's leave the past in the past. Let's worry about today. So Tommaso Ciampa has a match with Cameron Grimes later on in the show. And remember Sunday when I said I could see Ciampa and Thatcher teaming up as a tag team? After tonight, I felt it 1,000 times more. I think that would be a fab, and it makes sense. Them teaming up makes a ton of sense. The match that they had to take over made zero sense. We'll get to that match in a minute. Grizzled Young Veterans, they defeat Ever-Rise and Imperium in a three-way tag. You know, I want to like all three of these tag teams, but I have no connection to them whatsoever. I'm very curious for you all out there between the Grizzled Young Veterans, Imperium, and Ever-Rise. Which are there any of the three that you are into that you actually, I'm not saying that you like or don't like, because we all, you know, like wrestlers. I mean, they're talented. But is there anybody of those three teams that, you know, you actually enjoy seeing? Like if they were on TV every week, is there anybody of the three? Because for me, none of the three. Imperium, if Walter was around a little bit more, I probably would feel a little bit different. But right now, Imperium, none of the three really do anything much for me right now. So we got a couple of votes for Imperium, a couple of votes for nobody. One vote for grizzled young veterans. And I agree with you, Devin. Grizzled young veterans should not be baby faces. One of them reminds me so much of Shawn Michaels' Attitude Era. You know, I mean, if you look at him, it almost like if they tweaked his look a little bit, he would be a doppelganger for Attitude Era Shawn Michaels. So anyway, Toni Storm cuts a promo in the back. She's asked about Ember Moon, about turning on Ember Moon a few weeks ago. Toni Storm says, look, Ember Moon was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but obviously I made the right decision because I was on the winning team. Io Shirai interrupts Toni Storm and basically tells Toni Storm that I don't like you. I think that's a good enough reason to beat the shit out of someone. So they start brawling and they start heading to the ring. And Toni Storm tries to get out of Dodge, but here comes Ember Moon. Ember Moon throws her back in the ring. I think Io Shirai might have hit like a moonsault. And, you know, Ember Moon doing that to Toni Storm, obviously Toni would get a little, well, try to get a little bit of revenge towards the end of the night, as we talked about before. Tommaso Ciampa versus Cameron Grimes. Decent match. I have to look up Cameron Grimes' win-loss record for 2020. Because even though for the most of 2020, I have not liked Cameron Grimes at all, I think if they had a Smoke and Mirrors award, I think it should go to Cameron Grimes. For real, and I'm not kidding. Cameron Grimes' win-loss record has got to be worse than the Miami Marlins or some of the worst baseball teams of 2020. I mean, Cameron Grimes, like when he wins, that's the equivalent of like a holiday or like a date night. Like you have once in a blue moon. Cameron Grimes' win-loss record has got to be pathetic. And I think if his record is that bad, he should win some Smoke and Mirrors award because WWE is really, how this guy is not looked at as just an absolute waste, get rid of him. And I'm complimenting Cameron Grimes right now. But in the end, Cameron Grimes loses. Now, what happened in this match is during the match, Thatcher comes out. Thatcher's sitting watching the match. And then one of his students comes out, Tyler Rust. Tries to get involved in the match, backfires. And then Cameron Grimes, wins, hits him with the widow's bell. When Ciampa is walking off, Thatcher is pretty much saying to Ciampa, I had nothing to do with that, Ciampa leaves. Cameron Grimes, the annoying character that he plays, he's trying to get Timothy Thatcher's attention. Taylor Rust. What did I say? Tyler Rust? Taylor Rust. My apologies. So Cameron Grimes is trying to get Thatcher's attention. I'm trying to talk to you. And Thatcher just takes his leg and like twists it. Cameron Grimes does a flip. He's crying like a little bitch on the floor. And Thatcher walks off with a grin on his face. And I'm like, motherfucker. That's what I want to see. Now the storyline makes sense. I don't want to repeat everything I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, but if you remember the whole storyline with Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa, the reason why this storyline was stupid was Ciampa was cutting promos up to that point saying that there's a problem with today's culture. You complain, you get a match. You complain, you get this, this, and that. He's one of the dying breed, old school, blah, 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 and he's going to start trying to straighten out the current locker. Then he feuds with Timothy Thatcher. Timothy Thatcher is not old school. Timothy Thatcher's classes are all old school. Remember early on I said Timothy Thatcher reminds me of Stu Hart way before they started to do the Thatcher Thatch can? So now that match at TakeOver made zero sense because Thatcher is not an example of what Ciampa was trying to eliminate. So that made no sense. This makes sense. Thatcher is old school. Ciampa is old school. I want to see Thatcher and Ciampa team up. And that will help Thatcher, because if you follow me with the breakdown with the quarter hour ratings, Thatcher gets the lowest numbers on a regular basis. So, Benjamin says somebody told him it was because Thatcher is fake tough and abuses his students. No, no, no. Thatcher is legit. He is legit. He's extremely talented. And guess what? Even if he was fake tough, we're watching entertainment. We're in the world of entertainment where tough people on TV could be the biggest pussies in real life. You know, go on social media and you see it every day. I mean, everybody is tough, you know, behind. So it doesn't matter what you are privately, as long as you're not committing illegal or disgusting behavior. But if Thatcher is a wimp in real life, so what? That's how I look at it. You know, some big monsters are the most light-hearted people in real life. You know, sometimes when you do entertainment, you know, you go to a place that, you know, you don't go. You know, you're just creating a character that you actually don't live in real life. I won't compare myself to them, but I like doing these shows. Sometimes I get goofy because I let my guard down and I'm like, fuck it, we'll just have fun. If I make an ass out of myself, so be it, you know? So, you know, it's what you see on TV. And it's the opposite. Sometimes you see people on TV and they come off really, really nice. And then you hear stories, do not cross paths with that motherfucker. He'll kill you. He'll twist you like a pretzel. He'll have you, you know, kissing your own ass for real. You know, he'll have you twisted. So it's all about perception on TV. So I want to see Thatcher and Ciampa as a tag team, without a doubt. Thatcher and Ciampa for sure. So now that match is over. And later on, basically now Taylor Rust is being scouted by Malcolm Bivens. He appreciated what, you know, Rust did earlier today. And it kind of reminded me of MVP when he was scouting Vink and Stink. Remember when I talked about them? It just felt like the same storyline. All right, whatever. I want to know what's going on with Indira Shear. Are they ever coming back? And if they come back, I think it's a problem because they're so big. They would just run through everybody. I'd be paying attention about their future, to be honest with you. So, Xia Li and Boa, as I said earlier, they did that segment. Even if you don't like NXT, even if you could care less about Xia Li or Boa, watch that segment. Like I said, I think when WWE replays that online, you're going to see some black and white footage. That was phenomenal. Number one, you're not used to seeing WWE portray blood like that. You know, somebody gets busted open hard way, it's different. But this was a produced segment. And man, I will say this that I didn't say before. If they have Xia Li return with Boa in ring, they have to beat the crap out of everybody. Because you don't have Xia Li fighting to the point where her hands are bleeding, her legs are bleeding, she's crying and being pushed to the maximum. Bo is being whipped with Singapore canes, having the shit knocked out of him. And you got old guy in the background. You know, he looks like, you know, Senor Benjamin. To me, he looks like a Japanese or Chinese version of Senor Benjamin. But I love the segment. But you're portraying them, they're going to turn into monsters. They have to dominate when they come back. You do this vignette, and then they come back and they just lose and ultimately get squashed. This vignette means nothing. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal. Another segment which was wild was the celebration with Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I have no problem with Indy Hartwell, but I'm going to say something tonight that's either going to be hilarious or people are going to say that's disgusting. And I thought about should I use the comparison? But I'm like, you know what? I am going to use the comparison because it's not racist, but I'll explain what I'm going to in a moment. But we have LeRae, Gargano, Austin Theory, and Indy Hartwell hit the ring. And they're celebrating. And, you know, Gargano's bragging about his win. LeRae's bragging about her win. Austin Theory and Indy Hartwell are just standing there pretty much, you know, Theory's being a little animated. And I don't know if this is a name of a faction, but, you know, you had Gargano repeatedly saying they are the way. They are the way. If you're either in our way or get out of the way. And it kept saying everything with way. Austin Theory said Milky Way. And Indy Hartwell says anyway. It was just, it was a little goofy, but they brought out, Gargano had a surprise for Candice LeRae. And it was about, I don't know, 3 feet high, maybe. And it was, there was a black, you know, like burlap over it, black cover over it, so you didn't know what it was. And he wanted a drum roll. So Indy Hartwell is doing like a drum roll with a tongue. Austin Theory is just flexing his pecs. I actually could do that. I shouldn't wear, well, I'm not wearing the right shirt for it, but on the next show, I'll actually do that. I go like this. You'll see my pecs going like this. You could kind of see it a little bit. You can do that a little bit, but they reveal it to be a trophy. And at the top of the trophy, it doesn't look anything like Shotzi Blackheart, but it's supposed to be Shotzi Blackheart on a silver platter. You know, like, but it looks like a cute little figure. So it wasn't anything morbid or anything like that. Yeah, Benjamin is like, please no. Yeah, I probably won't do that. So you don't have to worry about it. But you go back and watch that segment and watch Indy Hartwell. I think I figured out what it is with her. I brought it up for War Games. I brought it up a week before, 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before. I know she's not on any medications. I'm not insinuating that she was. But the way her lack of facial reactions, like I knew somebody who was in school back in the day, and he wasn't on medications either. But I remember I used to see him in school, and we used to sometimes try to throw spitballs in his mouth because he'd be in class, and he'd be like this. And if you actually watch her, like, she doesn't have very well facial reactions as far. Like, when even when she gets tossed around, she doesn't get angry. She doesn't, you know, get pissed. She just has the same stoic. She's got a very stoic look on her face. Me, if I take a sleeping pill late at night and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, I can't sleep. I think it's the Indy Hartwell look. I could have the TV on. I could have the TV off. I'll be looking straight ahead like this. That's what she does. So she looks like someone who is just in a daze. So I know that's not as bad. People are like, that was it? No. When you see how she reacted tonight, when Gargano was bragging, LeRae was bragging, and he reveals this the award, and she's looking at him, reacted to Anissa Sinet. She says like one word answers. Like to Austin Theory, she said one word. She looks at the statues like, you know what she reminded me of? My parents used to have like a cleaning lady that used to show up at the house. And she would show up maybe once a week. And she didn't speak English. I mean, very, very little English. And, you know, my mom and dad would, you know, have her come in once a week and she would, you know, clean the floors, do laundry, do stuff. I mean, you know, it's not that my parents have it rich. It's just that me, I'm not there. I'm only there once a week. My brother's got his family and stuff going on and they physically can't do a lot of this stuff anymore. So either they just live like pigs and let things pile up or they have someone come in, unfortunately, and assist. But I remember like whenever, like I would go over there and like my father would bring home like some flowers for my mom. Like she would look at it and she'd be like, you know, or I would like my mom bought a show, and she'd be like, she looks like a maid or a cleaning lady that doesn't speak English, that everybody else is having a conversation, and like they want her to be in the conversation too, but she's like, oh, nice. Oh, yeah, yeah. Go back and watch her tonight. I don't know, man. I don't know. Just how I feel about it. But Damian Priest interrupts them, which made zero sense, because Damian Priest earlier is talking about how he wants to be heavyweight champion, so why even bother with Gargano again? But that was the seed from earlier. Damian Priest comes out, starts talking a little smack. Karrion Kross shows up, beats the crap out of Damian Priest, puts him to a table. I hope Damian Priest's head did not hit that fire extinguisher. So we'll probably have that blow-off match to eat up a week or two, leading to what I think is going to be Balor versus Kross, New Year's Evil. It's not official yet, but I think that's where they're going. So, Ken, I did mention that person's name before. Like I said, nothing personal. I like the guy, but I'll never forget what he said earlier this year. If you want a refresher course of what this person said and did years ago, everybody has every right to say and write what they want, I guess. I don't know. Malcolm Bivens wants to be Russ's manager. Then he says to McKenzie, oh, let's do lunch. So we get Killian Dane versus Pete Dunne. Decent match. You know, it's hard for me to get back into Killian Dane at all after all this stuff. And yes, I know the storyline he was laid out, but still, that was not the right time to do that storyline, to lay them out. You need to build momentum with him and Drake Maverick. Now it just feels like, you know, just a bullshit reason to get Dane and Drake versus Lorcan and Birch. Because what happens, Pete Dunne, they're having a decent match with Killian Dane, and then towards the end when Killian Dane's getting the upper hand, who shows up? Lorcan and Birch. They try to get involved, and sure enough, Drake Maverick tries to get involved. And then what ends up happening is Pete Dunne hits his bitter end, gets the win. So we'll see. But that kind of makes me feel that's where they're going with this. Main event, Raquel Gonzalez still riding that momentum, beating Ember Moon. I'm a little surprised they went with that match to close out NXT this week. Because I tell you, for early parts of the night, I was thinking about ratings today, and I'm like, you know, I wonder if NXT could actually, you know, win this one out. It's going to be tough. But then I'm looking at the match placement towards the end of this, and if you think about it, I mean, none of these matches really felt like they were must-see TV. Jake Atlas, Isaiah Swerve Scott, Tommaso Ciampa, Cameron Grimes, Killian Dane, Pete Dunne, Raquel Gonzalez, Ember Moon. Raquel Gonzalez, I've been praising her to death, but she's still not over at that level yet. So, you know, very surprised at some of the match selections today, but Raquel and Ember Moon tore it up, had a great match. Raquel Gonzalez literally picking up Ember Moon and just dropping almost like a chokeslam, gets the win. And Raquel Gonzalez earlier cut a promo. She thinks that she should be able to get a title shot against Io Shirai. I agree. So, you know, not a bad show tonight, but some of the matches, I found myself not interested. So now AEW, something I've noticed about AEW for a little while now, and today I thought it was more glaring than ever before. AEW's fallen into a habit of doing something. And I think some of you out there will say to me right away, DT, that's fine with me. And if it's fine with you, I'm fine with that also. But it gets to a point where people are going to get sick of it. And what that is, and I would love to do the whole recap first and then tell you what it is, but I'd rather tell you now. Then when we get into the matches, you're going to say, oh shit, you're right. Notice what AEW was doing consistently for months and months and months. And then a few months ago, just slowly changed away from it, and now it's almost non-existent. Does anybody know what I'm about to say? The lack of clean, not only clean finishes, but that's it. Match ends, clean win, go to commercial. After every match, something has to happen. When I get into it tonight, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So, opening match tonight, the Young Bucks beating the Hybrid 2. You know, what this stipulation sort of was is if the Hybrid 2 gets a win, they could get a title shot in the future. They didn't get the win. They looked very good, but this match really, I mean, it was your typical opening Dynamite match. Young Bucks have had quite a few of them. Butcher and the Blade, Private Party, and a few others in the past that I'm escaping right now. Top Flight. So, you know, it was a nice opening match. I tell you, for the first 15 minutes, I was like, okay, all right, NXT turning up a notch tonight, opening up with Finn Balor, Damian Priest, you know, Kyle O'Reilly, Pete Dunne, teasing Karrion Kross. All right, pretty solid. And then you got the match selection tonight on NXT, and it was like, so the Young Bucks, they win today against TH2. You know, they hit them with a bunch of thrust kicks at the end and then the BTE trigger for the win. But instead of the match just ending and going to commercial, the Acclaim come out. They tried to attack the Young Bucks. And SCU comes out to make the save. Now, seriously, I watch AEW every week. Why have SCU come out to make the save? I mean, does that really make sense? I mean, you think about it. You felt like, okay, they're only doing this so they could have the Acclaim take on SCU next week. Didn't that feel that way to open up the show? But you see what I mean? The Young Bucks beat TH2, and instead of going to commercial or backstage segment or something else, no, the Acclaim have to try to attack the Young Bucks, and then somebody makes the save. So remember what I said before, okay? MJF cuts a promo on Orange Cassidy, calling him an embarrassment, a joke, and he's going to beat his brains out later on tonight. They had Darby Allin do one of those Rorschach tests. You know when they show you like a symbol or a blob and you're supposed to say what you believe it is? I just watched the episode of Beavis and Butthead the other day when they were showing them naked girls and they just started giggling and everything. And they had things hooked up on their penises because they said that they couldn't get, you know, erections. So anyway, I still watch Beavis and Butthead. Sorry, everybody. But we see Darby Allin taking that test, and they show him an ink blot of Sting. It looks like Sting, and Darby Allin chuckles about it. All right. You know, interesting segment. Sting comes out. And again, props to AEW. I think this was quarter hour two now, I believe. Sting comes out. You have Cody in the ring with Arn Anderson, and Tony Schiavone's there. They bring out Sting. And, you know, Arn Anderson, you know, is welcoming Sting. And then he leaves the ring. And then Tony Schiavone was going to leave the ring, but Sting wanted a hug from Tony Schiavone. How long has it been and this and that? By the way, it was funny. Tony Schiavone on Impact yesterday, I caught that Tony Khan had said to Schiavone, like, how long has it been since, you know, he brought up how Schiavone was in Impact Wrestling one time in 2003, and Schiavone said it was like 25 years ago. And then Schiavone's like acting like, okay, his math is off or anything. It was funny. But anyway, so Sting is in the ring. Darby Allin is in the rafters, you know, looking like what Sting used to do. He's got the TNT title there. And Sting, you know, he's pumped up, and Cody is welcoming Sting. Sting is welcoming the fans. You know, it was nice to be back on TNT.
And, you know, there was a funny point where, you know, he's calling Cody a kid. And, you know, Sting says that he knows that Cody knows everything that's going on within AEW. But Sting is here. Sting is going to be here for a long time. And, you know, they kind of teased a little bit that Sting may have some issue with Darby Allin. I think, like I said, we talked about it last week. I know a lot of you talked about it as well. You know, it feels like Sting could possibly be some type of a mentor for Darby Allin. If that's what they're going to do first, that's fine with me. I have no problem with it whatsoever. But for some reason, they kind of teased dissension between Sting and Cody. Because Cody, at first, he's like, you don't know how long I wanted to be in the same ring with you and this, this, and that. And, you know, I don't know. There just was the dynamic. Be honest with you, the dynamic with Sting and Cody felt a little bit off. But I enjoyed Sting's appearance. Nostalgia. He looks great. Yes, face paint, obviously. You know, a lot of the aging is hidden behind face paint. But, you know, Sting, I trust he trusts his body. He knows his body better than we do. And we still have no idea what Sting is going to be doing in AEW. Is he going to wrestle? Is he not going to wrestle? So I don't think any of us, put it this way, if you've enjoyed Sting's career, in my opinion, you should show a little respect to him by not jumping to conclusions as far as what he's going to do and not do. You know, I would wait and see. And then once we know, then you react to it. So anyway, I wanted to give a shout out to Ken, Terminator by DQ. Unlike Sam, Neil and Austin are good guys. So he just wanted to shout out Neil and Austin. They are regulars here on YouTube every week. And I thank you all, even Sam, which I know some of you are like, boo. I appreciate you all. And by the way, everyone, if you're enjoying the show, hit that like button. You know, someone brought to my attention, and you're right. You're absolutely right. And a few people say to me, DT, a lot of us can't hit the like button when we tune into the shows live because we check it out through our mobile phones. And when you're sitting back relaxed or you're watching it through your Roku, there is no like button readily available to hit. So a lot of you, you know, are starting to tell me that you do it later on, you do it the next day. And it's that, so I get it. I get it. So like I said, I'm still new over here. There's a lot of things, but I don't think about the fact that some of you, Roku, great example, because I watch a lot of YouTube through Roku. And I never thought about, I'm like, yeah, I've never hit the like button for anybody watching a clip through Roku. It's not easily available. But, you know, if you have the capabilities tonight and you can, you know, cool. That would be cool. Also, Neil Ray wanted to shout out Ken. And he said, Pete Dunne is going to be a big star. Pete Dunne, without a doubt, you know, somebody made fun of me the other day. You know, lighthearted. I didn't take offense to it. But he made fun of me the other day because I said that Pete Dunne is a monster. And they brought up his size, and they said that's not necessarily a monster. Honestly, Pete Dunne could probably stretch us into pretzels, twist us into pretzels, and put a submission move on us where we'd be crying like babies. So you don't have to be 6'5", 300 pounds to be a monster. I could guarantee you, this person who I know is tuning in tonight, if you said that to the Dynamite Kid's face in the 80s and he twisted you like a pretzel, am I too small to be a monster now? So I don't base monsters on just height, size, and how they look. He is a monster because he is just fabulous in the ring and, you know, submission moves, just Pete Dunne is awesome, you know, and some people don't like him. I totally respect that. But Pete Dunne, in my opinion, definitely is going to be a heavyweight champion down the line. And I think only people that really don't watch NXT are going to be the ones that are going to criticize about it. Pete Dunne is a monster, in my opinion. I say that as a compliment.
That guy is a beast. Is that better a term? He's a beast. I love his work. And Anthony Diaz stole that Taz joke from me. That's cool. You know, look, most of what we all say is probably been said by other people in the past. So it's all good. Ken also said that, he said that I was a good guy as well. Was I a fan of Chris Candido? Should we tell him, Ken? Should we tell him? Should we tell Ken, I should say. Look, I want to get this AEW recap done so I could call it a night. We're definitely going to be under 2 hours tonight, which is great. But I'll say this. I had the privilege of becoming friends with Chris Candido. Not hardcore deep friends, not buddies where we hung out and everything, but I became friends with him. Friends to the point. A lot of you may know Johnny Candido, Chris Candido's brother. He's doing documentary about his brother. Had a lot of people from ECW and other feds doing interviews on that documentary. Johnny Candido approached me about a year and a half ago and said, hey, Anthony, I'd like for you to be on this documentary. Tell a couple of stories about my brother, you know, privately. Because one thing, my friendships with people outside of, you know, the cameras and the microphones, I keep it quiet. I talk to people in wrestling almost every day, DMs, emails, and I don't name drop them because to me it always felt campy. It felt like goofy. You know, trust me, I tell you, people appreciate the support, but they like honesty. And there are people out there that support certain wrestlers that truly support them, but it gets to a weirdness level sometimes. And, you know, Sonya Deville addressed it today. Some people are wondering, is there a new creep? But some people out there who support her, you know, will tweet 10 times about it. And, you know, you see that with wrestlers. When Roman Reigns came back, you saw a little bit of weirdness going on with Mandy Rose, with Alexa Bliss. Tonight with Karrion Kross, you got grown-ass people that are tweeting like 15 times about his return. And trust me, I think in Karrion Kross's eyes, he appreciates all the love and support, but it gets to a creepy level, you know? So I keep my conversations and my friendships private, unless somebody says it publicly. There's been wrestlers in the past who have said publicly on podcasts, oh man, I love listening to that guy. If they say it publicly, then I will. But Johnny asked me to be on that documentary, and I said no. And he said, why not, bro? And I said, because. I said, you know, everybody on the documentary is famous. They've been in the business. And then, you know, I come off and people are going to be like, who's this guy? You know, so I declined. And like I always say to all of you out there, when I tell you things like this, the difference between me and other people is usually when people tell stories, name drop, and they know people, it's usually right after they died because you can't, there's no way to verify it. But Johnny's around. Ask him. Chris Candido is an awesome guy, man. I still got my Chris Candido Memorial Show shirt that I made. In fact, for all you people out there that don't like Meltzer, I'll tell you a quick story too. Another reason why I like Meltzer. When Chris Candido died, we did a memorial show and raised money. I gave Tammy $3,000 plus that I raised on my own, not even the show, outside, selling shirts and everything like that. And the money went to good use. But Dave Meltzer did a tribute to Chris Candido in his newsletter the week after he died. And Dave Meltzer sent me 150 newsletters that I gave away as a gift with every Chris Candido Memorial Show shirt that people purchased, the first 150. So when you think about it, you know, I sold all 150 and I think another 100 on top of it. And people trusted me when I said all the proceeds will go here, that's where they went. But for all of you out there that, you know, really don't like Meltzer, there's a lot of good about Meltzer that nobody ever knows about. And that man, think about how much his newsletters are. He sent me a box of 150 newsletters that I gave away. So
Chris Candido was awesome, man. Was awesome. I still remember the where I was, and I've talked about it on the shows before. You know, when I got that phone call, the masked maniac was crying hysterical on the other line and told me that he passed. It was rough. You know, when you know, once in a while you hear people say, what wrestler death affected you the most? And a lot of people will say Eddie Guerrero, Owen Hart, Brian Pillman, you know, wrestlers like that. For me, I always put Chris Candido at the top of the list. I put Bam Bam Bigelow up there as well because I became friends with Bam Bam Bigelow too. You know, another day, for those that don't know the story, I'll tell you the story about the ECW ring again. And Bam Bam Bigelow was stalking me for $4,000. Bam Bam Bigelow was good people, man. Demons caught up to him. So you got a little real conversation tonight. So, I think Chris Candido and Bam Bam are worth a little time stamp for tonight. So, anyway, let's get back to AEW recap. So, Sting was out there 5 minutes. AEW, like I said before, could have milked this all night long. They kept it simple. They reeled it in a little bit. They're not overdoing it, which is extremely important for AEW. If they make it seem like he's here, what is he going to do next? He's here, blah, 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 blah. I mean, then people start anticipating things that probably aren't going to happen, especially that he's 61 years old. So by doing this small segment today, and that's it. No controversy. We'll see where this goes with Darby Allin and Sting. I thought it was excellent. Sam, I'm shouting you out, Sam. I appreciate what you said. I don't know if you're a good guy. I only know you through the chat. And even if you said a super chat right now, I still don't know if you're a good guy. You could be a prick that just happens to enjoy this prick. You know, we're all pricks at some point. We could be honest. But I like Sting's appearance today. Little weird dynamic with Cody. Kind of teasing something that really doesn't make sense right now. I think you should have just focused on Darby. Like, it almost felt like Sting had to be part of that moment. Maybe he deserves it. But it just felt like, you know, Sting had to be part of that moment. All right, whatever. So right after that, Team Taz is in the back, and they're mocking Sting. They're mocking Cody. And Taz, not only is with Team Taz, but he also has his son with him, who was trained with Cody for a little while. Obviously, his son is going to be injected in some storyline in the near future. Sam says he is a good guy. I will take your word for it. I'll definitely take your word for it. FTR beat the Varsity Blondes of Griff Garrison and Brian Pillman Jr. Not much of a match. I mean, they let Garrison and Pillman hit a couple of moves, but I think, including AEW Dark, the Varsity Blondes have one win. So it's not like they've been having momentum on AEW Dark and now let's put them on Dynamite. I just think that they had no one else really to lose to as far as FTR, and they wanted to use really young guys. And, you know, they get the win. And then after the match is over, Jurassic Express is at ringside, and FTR and Jurassic Express exchange a few words, little confrontation. I think we will probably see Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus versus FTR in the near future, which maybe some people like. I'm open to it, but doesn't look like FTR is going to be back in the title picture anytime soon. So now we get another segment. Alex Marvez, earlier in the day, interviews Hangman Page. And he says that next week, Hangman Page is in a six-man tag, and it's against Private Party and Matt Hardy. Hangman Page, they did not know who his tag partners were going to be. So creeping up like this.
They were like this.
Is Alex Reynolds and John Silver. And they're wearing these shirts that say recruitment specialists on it.
And they're saying that they'll be Hangman Page's partners. And, you know, yeah, it's a makeshift tag team. They're trying to do the storyline where Hangman Page is teasing being in the Dark Order. Maybe this leads to Hangman Page versus Brody Lee. Possibly. Anybody notice how this attack storyline with Moxley kind of disappeared? Maybe you have somebody else in Impact Wrestling reveal that they attacked Moxley a couple of weeks ago. Just an idea. But I didn't forget about that. But Hangman Page says, look, I'm not joining the Dark Order, but one night I'll team with you. So next week we get Alex Reynolds, John Silver, and Hangman Page versus Matt Hardy and Private Party. So Dustin Rhodes defeats 10 in 2. I mean, the match was so freaking fast. I mean, what got me about this match, I loved the teasing of the 7 stuff that I said earlier. But the one thing that got me confused about this match is, how come no members of Dark Order get, like, really irate when their own members get not only lose, but lose handedly? Like, they're more interested about recruiting other people than straightening out their own camp. And that's the storyline. I'm not saying in real life, but, you know, I mean, what happened with Colt Cabana? Colt Cabana still does not fit in that group. It doesn't make sense. But they tried to tease. Evil Uno's offering Dustin a spot in the Dark Order. He could be 7. Dustin, for a second, tease it. He slaps Evil Uno. Now, remember what I said before. Every match after had some type of confrontation. After FTR with Griff Garrison and Brian Pillman Jr., they teased an issue with Jurassic Express. After Dustin versus 10, Dustin gets into it a little bit with Evil Uno. After every match. Now we get the Inner Circle ultimatum. Basically what this was they came out and, you know, they were talking about MJF's match later on, but Jericho was saying that, you know, they got to pull it together and this and that. Hager doesn't like Wardlow. Guevara doesn't like MJF, blah, 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 blah. Santana was not there because of personal reasons. You want to Google it and see why, you can, but, you know, it was a legit reason why Santana was not there. But MJF thinks that he might be the issue, and, you know, he's trying to give compliments to Guevara, kind of patronizing him, and Guevara wasn't having any of it. They start arguing. Ortiz then grabs the mic, and he calls MJF and Wardlow that they're both talented, but not as human beings, and he wants Guevara to be the better man and shake MJF's hand. And if you remember what I said about a month and a half ago, that ultimately I think Guevara is going to be like what Randy Orton was to Evolution. Guevara will get turned on, and he will turn babyface down the line. I think they're still planting the seeds. Because tonight, Guevara tells Jericho and MJF, he tells the Inner Circle, look, I'll shake his hand. But if we have any more incidents, he says, I'm quitting the Inner Circle. And he said it to MJF's face and to Jericho's face. Now, if you know anything about mafia or tribal chief or anything, the leader, the head of the table, the big kahuna, you don't ever get in their face. You don't ever get in their face. So that's basically what they were teasing today. But at the very end of the segment, there was some hilarious stuff that went on between Jake Hager and Wardlow. I mentioned this the last 2 weeks, that they just have this creepy stare at each other. And tonight, Wardlow finally got a chance to talk. If you go on YouTube, you realize the guy actually can talk. He cut a promo. But, you know, Jake Hager's like, why does this guy keep staring at me? And Wardlow's like, you keep staring at me. You're creeping me out. There's something wrong with you. You're weird. It was fucking funny. Because the way they were yelling at each other, it's like you would say the very same thing in real life. And, you know, I think about that sometimes on social media. Like, there's some people out there that even, and it must drive them mad that I only tweet like 2 times a week, 3 times a week, other than pushing my shows. Because they must reload my page wondering, who am I going to take a shot at next? And it just never comes. But they just have an awesome dynamic. I think, You know, you look at it. Jericho and MJF had some great chemistry comedy together. You've had Guevara and MJF kind of a little bit, but I think Wardlow and Hager, I need to see more of that dynamic. I honestly like Wardlow and Hager tonight in this segment more than anybody else. I thought that was hilarious. So FTR, little interview later on, they make fun of Jungle Boy for climbing the top rope in a battle royal, you know. I would have been fine with that segment other than didn't one of them, like, climb a rope in their tag title match? Yes, I know some of you are going to say, well, that's the heels, so they kind of, you know, mock themselves or they're hypocritical or, you know. But still, it was like a dumb reason after all this time to be making fun of someone. So now we get Eddie Kingston, the Butcher and the Blade, beating Lance Archer and the Lucha Bros. And the story of this was that the Butcher put Pentagon through its table, and he was being attended to by refs and doctors. He had to be carried to the back, so this pretty much was a handicap match. And look, the match was fun, a lot of clusterfuck. You know, it's a typical six-man tag that we always see in AEW. But in the end, you know, there was one point where Rey Fénix hit some type of like arm drag and then a scissors combo to the Butcher and then tried to dive onto Eddie Kingston, and it just looked like, you hope Rey Fénix didn't get injured. You look at that spot again, that looked kind of scary. But in the end, you know, you had, you know, the powerbomb neck breaker to Rey Fénix by the Butcher and the Blade, their combo move. They get the win. And after the match is over, here's Lance Archer attacking everybody else after the match. And, you know, again, you know, even though he was involved in the match, still, the match cannot just end and go to commercial or backstage segment. Every match has some post-match bullshit after it. Every match. Every match. So, we got tonight also a segment with Brandi Rhodes, Tony Schiavone, and Shaq. And I wrote this yesterday that if it was up to me, I would have had Shaq come out on live TV and say that he doesn't know Jade Cargill. There must be some public proof that they're friends. And I've never looked, but even if there was public proof on TV, it's a storyline. But I would have liked to see Shaq come out there, act like he doesn't know who Jade Cargill is. I don't know her, I don't know her, I don't know her, and this and that. And then Jade Cargill just kicks him in the nuts. I think that that would have elevated Jade Cargill a little bit, but instead what this felt like tonight was, let's elevate Brandi Rhodes. She's got her arm in a sling, teasing it's broken, and she's still being the tough bitch that she is. And, you know, Shaq originally felt bad, didn't agree with what Cargill did, but then he likes the idea about them having a confrontation on TV and this and that. And Shaq, I know he just mentioned it in passing, but he's like, oh, if that happens, I'm there. I don't know if that's really going to happen. But, you know, Shaq, there was like a weird dynamic where they kind of forced like Shaq to come off as if he's insulting Brandi. And I like heel Shaq. I like heel Shaq. But Brandi picks up a glass of water and she called him, I wrote it down. She said, you're an overgrown asshole. And she dumps the glass of water on Shaq's face and she storms off. And then I don't know why they did this, but he gets the water all over him. And then for about 3 or 4 seconds, I know it's not a big deal, for about 3 or 4 seconds, Shaq is looking at the camera with water all over his face doing this. They didn't pause it. It looked like a goofy pose face after. And I thought the ending was dumb. But, you know, it's Shaq. I don't mind it a little bit, you know. Shaq has got content on TNT, so it makes sense. But you know, I was a little confused about this segment. Then later on, they had shown Jade Cargill and Nyla Rose. It looked like they were going to beat down, I think it was Big Swall, it might have been, or Red Velvet. And then you had Serena Deeb come out to try to make the save. And then you had someone else come out, Ivelisse Diamante, come out. And it, next thing you know, it was just a clusterfuck. And that's to set up a match next week on TV. Abaddon beats Tayshia Price, squash match. After the match is over, after she hits the neck breaker, she keeps beating down Price until Kawashita makes the save. And she had a Singapore cane and she whacked Abaddon right on top of the head with it. Felt like Sandman ECW 1995 just nailed her. And she laid out, but then she got up like a monster. And you see like Sheeta and Price trying to get out of Dodge. So very interesting that AEW is going with Sheeta and Abaddon this early. But hey, you know, I'm not going to crap on it. I'm curious to see where it goes. Inner Circle says they're going to be at ringside later with Orange MJF against his match with Orange Cassidy. You had now the interview with Kenny Omega and Don Callis with Tony Schiavone. And they come out of a helicopter. And by the way, in Florida, you can actually rent a helicopter for like a ride. It's not as expensive as you think it is. They do tours and everything as well. But it was perfect to basically look like, you know, Kenny Omega's got the Bucks, Don Callis, you know, better than everyone else. Alex Marvez tries to interview them. No, they're going to talk in the ring. And basically what went down was Schiavone was upset at what happened last week. They keep trying to push this as a big screw job from last week, which I wouldn't put it on that level. You know, I think, you know, the storyline should be more upsetting that he's taking the title to other promotions. You know, when Don Callis says that Tony Khan invited him and Tony Khan and did this and Tony Khan did that, and then Tony Khan got burned, Don Callis is like, welcome to the wrestling business, kid. I get all that. But the thing is that it's coming across like AEW welcomed Impact Wrestling. You know what I mean? Yesterday, Tony Khan and Tony Schiavone, even though I liked the segment, it felt warm. It felt happy. It felt, hey, you know, I invite you both to be on Dynamite tomorrow, which we're going to have a great show. And these, like, this didn't feel like animosity. The only people that have animosity right now, it seems like, are the fans and Kenny Omega. So they got to tweak that a little bit, in my opinion. But, you know, Don Callis saying that Kenny Omega, you know, doesn't just make money. He doesn't just do matches. He makes history. And, you know, Kenny Omega with the shades on and looking a little bit like Don Johnson, Miami Vice. Perfect cleaner fashion, you know, does his goodbye and goodnight. And, you know, U.S. fans are getting a look at Kenny Omega. Well, not, or fans that just casually heard about him are now starting to see what he could do. He's phenomenal on the mic. He's phenomenal in the ring. And like I said a couple of months ago, I think Kenny Omega is going to be the Wrestler of the Year 2021 if they keep on this route. You know, I mean, 2021 hasn't happened yet, but, you know, I think that's the goal. Not just for him, but for AEW. So check this out. Dynamite, December 23rd. They're calling it AEW Dynamite Holiday Bash. Now, that episode may air late because there's a basketball game earlier in the night, the Celtics versus the Bucks. Dynamite airs immediately after that game. So if the game ends late, AEW will start late. December 30th, we will have New Year's Smash Night 1 with Chris Jericho on commentary. And then January 6th, going head-to-head with New Year's Evil and my father's birthday. So I don't know what I'm doing January 6th. I'll probably say, happy birthday, Dad, and then race back over here to do the show. But it will be New Year's Smash Night 2 with special guest Snoop Dogg. So Snoop Dogg will be on the January 6th AEW Dynamite. And again, I'm very curious to see how WWE treats that. Next week, we have Cody versus Angelico. Next week, we have John Silva, Alex Reynolds, and Hangman Page versus Private Party and Matt Hardy. Next week, we have The Acclaim versus SCU. Next week, we have Serena Deeb and Big Swall versus Ivelisse and Diamante. Main event tonight for the Dynamite Diamond Ring, you had Orange Cassidy beating MJF. And I think we all figured that would happen, especially after last year. You know, it's time to give it to someone else. And Orange Cassidy, you know, he was doing his usual stick. You had the Inner Circle around ringside. And, you know, there was a couple of goofy antics where they throw a bat in the ring and MJF grabs the bat. Orange Cassidy acts like he's knocked out, a la Eddie Guerrero. The ref turns around, he looks, he sees the bat. And, you know, the commentators saying, well, you can't call what you can't see. Brain fart. MJF beating Orange Cassidy. Did I say Orange Cassidy beating MJF? MJF beating Orange Cassidy. What happened in the match was, like I said, you had Orange Cassidy, who personally, wow, that's like the ultimate brain fart there. Holy shit. Sorry, my mistake. I know, right? It's getting a little bit late. Basically, with this match, you know, I didn't like the commercial breaks, by the way. They had the picture-in-picture, but, you know, you had all these members in the Inner Circle at ringside, and you had best friends at ringside as well. And it felt like, you know, look, after a year of year of MJF with the ring, it's time to, you know, put it to someone else. And that's what I'm thinking pretty much the whole night. Okay, somebody's talking about Snoop Dogg. Michael Gonzalez says WWE already took the Snoop Dogg merchandise down. Interesting. They just had Snoop Dogg talk to The Undertaker. Very interesting. So anyway, let's get to this main event because I want to end this. It's getting a little late here. But anyway, Orange Cassidy, my thinking was MJF had it for a whole year. It's time to give it to somebody else. Orange Cassidy, they had him beat Jericho a couple of times. Orange Cassidy, before COVID, one of the most over wrestlers in AEW. MJF, the ring really has no bearing whatsoever during the year, if you think about it. I mean, he might use it as an illegal weapon one time in a match, but you could do that with a pair of brass knucks. So my thinking is, if Orange Cassidy wins it, you could picture some comedy where he's got this big goofy ring. It's not goofy, it's nice, but big ring, and he goes to put it in his pockets, and the hand doesn't fit because the ring keeps getting in the way. Yeah, you want to know someone who's that? Orange Cassidy is more over than some people think. But me going into this match, I'm thinking it's time for Orange Cassidy to get another notch under his belt. I don't think it's needed for MJF to have this another year. So they have their match. And again, I didn't like the commercial breaks because, this match felt like it was going to be a powerful main event. There were stipulations involved. Last year, we had Diamond Dallas Page getting, you know, with the ring presentation, all that stuff. I think they should have treated like an important title match. I agree with you, Sam. So we get the match, and it is excellent. You know, MJF is hitting a lot of psychology, landing a lot of moves. Orange Cassidy, a little comedy early on, but really, you know, nailing his spots. And, one point, like I said, they threw the bat in the ring, and MJF has the bat in his hand. The referee turns around. The referee didn't see Orange Cassidy get knocked out, but teasing that he's going to call for a DQ. First of all, you're not supposed to have a weapon in the ring anyway, but it's okay. Getting back to something earlier, I just wanted to mention really quickly too. When Ciampa had his match against Cameron Grimes and that student
ran in and got involved. Why wasn't there a DQ? I was just pointing that out. Why wasn't there a DQ? But anyway, so they have the match, and, you know, you got the Inner Circle, but as I'm looking at it, I'm looking at the clock, and it's like 9:57, 9:58, and they're still going back and forth, back and forth. Orange Cassidy hits MJF with, like, the, it's almost like the Superman punch with Roman Reigns, and, you know, we're at 9:59, and then sure enough, MJF, you know, lands his finisher. I think he did it twice, and gets the win. And how it ended was the referee kept getting distracted. Then now you have clusterfuck all outside the ring. Best friends, Inner Circle, and then here comes Miro. And, you know, I know Miro's going to have a big 2021 in AEW, but they had Miro hit the ring, and he just clotheslines Orange Cassidy out of his shoes. I mean, just wailed him. And then I think Miro was wearing like a Versace shirt, and he had, you know, like just, you know, being stylish with the blonde hair now. And Miro is just flexing up the rampway. Didn't he throw like one of the members of Best Friends aside? Like, it was weird. Was it a member of the Best Friends? There was a wrestler who went up the rampway as well, and Miro just like tossed him behind him, and it almost looked like, what the fuck you doing over here? I'm supposed to be here with Kip Sabian. Did anybody remember who it was? Because I looked at that, I'm like, whoever that was, really. I mean, that you take someone like that to wrestler court. But so anyway, Miro hits a vicious clothesline on Orange Cassidy, knocks him out, and then MJF hits his finisher for the win. And that's how we go. They went off the air like this. I mean, right after the pinfall, they show brawling outside the ring. And if you looked outside the ring, Griff Garrison was there. Brian Pillman Jr., I think, was there. I don't know if Jungle Boy was there, but there was all these people there. And again, this goes to what I said at the beginning of the recap, that every match follows with some after-match beatdown. Every match tonight, they did that. Every single one. And it's happening more and more and more. And maybe some people don't have a problem with that, but, you know, this is turning into clusterfuck finish. You know, not even clusterfuck finish, but, you know, like, after-match beatdown, after-match beatdown, after-match beatdown, after-match beatdown. You keep doing that, after-match beatdowns don't mean nothing anymore. So, I don't know. I like Miro. I'm telling you, I'm enjoying, you know, I know they're not doing all that much with him right now, but, you know, it feels like he's taking a little bit of a physical and a mental break for a little bit after, you know, working for all those years for WWE and some testy storylines at the very end. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. So, anyway, before I go, the ratings. Last week, as I predicted, you all knew this as well. It's not like I'm, you know, so talented, but, you know, people thought immediately, oh, Sting, he's going to pop an incredible rating. Most people did not realize Sting was on. People that were watching AEW saw it. Some people that were on social media not watching wrestling tuned in. But for the most part, you know, and as in, I don't remember the quarter hours, but you didn't have people tuning away from NXT to tune into Sting. The quarter hours, I got into that. This week was going to be the telltale week, because now even casual fans know about it, and they knew Sting was going to be on tonight. They heard about Shaq. Feels like AEW's rising their game a little bit. Maybe seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel as far as COVID, especially when this vaccine is going to start being shipped out this weekend. And Florida is going to have a big, you know, involvement with vaccines next week. You have a shitload of people getting vaccinated next week. So, you know, we'll see what happens. In the end, NXT started hot, and I felt it went downhill. It had little moments here and there. But just because Karrion Kross comes out to attack Damian Priest doesn't mean that 100,000 people are suddenly going to turn the channel and watch it.
So I think in the end, I think AEW dominates the fuck out of NXT once again this week. Even though we had War Games, and even though War Games was awesome, I still think after that first quarter hour, I think NXT lost a lot of interest by fans, and they had a hard time getting it back. And again, if Ember Moon and Raquel Gonzalez do over 650,000 fans, I will be very impressed with that. And I, you know, I am in the camp of Raquel Gonzalez, and I've been praising Ember Moon a little bit as well, but I just don't think that is solid enough, especially right after War Games. I think people wanted to see maybe a little bit, you know, higher caliber wrestlers or higher on the food chain. So this week, AEW, I don't think they go over 900,000 again, but I think it's going to be close. I'm going to say AEW is going to do 881. I'm going to say, no, that's kind of sounds high too. I'm going to go with eight. No, I'll stay good. Fuck it. I'll say 881 for AEW. And NXT, I think, is going to do at least 200,000 viewers less. Now, remember, last week, wrestling got almost 1.7 million viewers at some points. Nobody talked about that. So if AEW does 881, even if NXT did 600,000, that would be a little under 1.5, and that sounds like an awfully low number. So if AEW does 881, and we're thinking it's going to be right around 1.6 million fans, 1.65, then NXT's got to do about 700,000. 881 to 700,000 is 1.58 million viewers, and that might even be low. So I'm going to say 881 for AEW, NXT 716. Then I think that's going to be a high number as well. I would not be surprised if NXT is only in like the 660, 670 range, but I'll be generous and give him 716 or whatever I said. So, but everyone, I am out of here. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Great conversation. Sorry about the brain fart at the end. I wasn't even reading notes. So, you know, it's late. I've been up since 5:30 this morning. It's now almost 12:30. By the time I get everything online, it's going to probably be about 2 o'clock in the morning. I got to get up at 6. So, everyone, if you enjoyed tonight's episode, give it a thumbs up, hit the like button. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do, so you're notified whenever we're doing shows. I will be back here Friday after SmackDown for your SmackDown recap, Don Tony show. We'll talk about Joey Ryan and a few other things. But I'm going to jet out of here. I'm going to put this online, work on my timestamps, which a lot of you are very, very happy, and I will keep doing it. So everybody, have a great night. And let me know, like I said, in the comment section, let me know what you thought about the shows, about Sting, about whatever else. And in the process, you may actually win a pretty cool prize in the process. So, night, everybody. Be well. I'll see you Friday night, 10:05 p.m., right after SmackDown. Ciao.